flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They had very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Podcast UFO. This is Martin Willis. Michael Luck will be joining us in a few moments. Today is episode number 53 with Thomas Fusco. He has some very interesting theories about what's going on. Really enjoyed talking to him. And a couple of announcements. Still looking for some sponsors to help out with the trip that we're making down to North Carolina for the symposium. You can contact me at martin@podcastufo.com. Don't forget to check out our website, podcastufo.com. You can join in on our forum or also on our very active Facebook page and follow us on Twitter as well. All those icons are right on our website. And please do take a look at our website because we have a lot of great articles, mostly written by Michael Luck, who's coming up now with the news. How are you, Michael?
Great. How are you this week?
Excellent. What's going on?
Well, Martin, we have a few interesting topics this week, starting with an update to one of last week's stories. First, though, I'd like to take a second, too, to remind everyone that the podcastufo.com website show notes have links to all the original stories. And while there, listeners should check out our forums where they can interact with others, including well-known authors, researchers, and, of course, the Podcast UFO staff. Now, leading the news this week, the Chinese farmer and rabbit hunter known only as Li, who announced that he had a dead alien in his freezer on Sino Weibo, was arrested after admitting that his story was a hoax, and he was held in prison for 5 days. His charges are being translated into English as creating a public disturbance. But in a country without the guarantee of free speech and a government-controlled internet, this may be a little bit more serious than it sounds. We will continue to follow the story of Mr. Li as news becomes available.
Yes, I heard Dr. Stephen Greer is feverishly working on the DNA still on that.
Well, you know, he did say that he had DNA tests that proved it was an alien. They had to come somewhere.
Yeah, it had to come from somewhere. You know, I was looking at the pictures of this alien, and it looks like kind of like it was made out of mashed potatoes or something.
My first thought was that it really honestly kind of looked like dog poop.
Okay. All right.
That's art school dropout background offering that criticism.
Okay. We can only go up from here, Michael.
That's really. Right. And yeah. And I have news of some much better evidence. A photograph of two unidentified flying objects in the skies over Bracknell, Berkshire, England, is being called, quote, one of the best ever by Nick Pope. The picture, which shows two disc-like objects in a twilight sky, was taken on the evening of June 14th by Steve Lambert from outside a pub. Now, Pope is, of course, known as the former Ministry of Defense worker, famous for manning the UFO desk, and he says that these objects do not appear to be conventional aircraft or Chinese lanterns.
Just a real quick note, I have nothing against Nick Pope. Maybe he did turn down being on our show, like, twice. But, you know, I pulled this from his Facebook page because, he could have given a little humble disclaimer to any of this, but nope, he posted it just as is. And, quote, in this photo taken by AP Images for 7-Eleven, Nick Pope, the world's leading authority on UFOs and unexplained phenomena, uses his smartphone to check in on Foursquare at a local 7-Eleven in New York's Times Square. Interesting. The world's leading authority on UFOs. Did you know that?
Not just UFOs, all kinds of paranormal phenomena.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so if he likes those discs, you know, I'm behind him all the way.
That's good. It's good that you're not harboring any kind of a grudge.
No, not at all. No, I wouldn't do that. No.
Now, in that International Business Times article we have linked to in our show notes, it also mentions that a June 13th news segment on the Russia Today network, which was originating from London, captured an unidentified object flying over the city in a background shot. A YouTube video of the Russia Today segment is also included in that article. Did you happen to see that?
Yeah, that's a great shot. You know, it's not the first time that someone has been, you know, on TV and there's something caught behind them. It's interesting.
Yeah, it seems from some other things I've seen that this Russia Today network, which is recently kind of making some inroads into American cable and satellite, I know it's on Dish now, has had a few UFO-related stories and been a little bit more friendly to the subject in the past. I might have to start checking it out on occasion. It is English language, so you might want to see if it's on your system at home. The Australian ABC ran a recent radio story about a new play called Alienation, based on the stories of alien abductees who claim that their alien abductors, not human abductors, took them to a facility in the Blue Mountains. The play, which is currently in rehearsals, is a co-production of the Perth Theatre Company and Q Theatre Company. It was written by Lachlan Philpott and will be directed by Perth Theatre Company's Melissa Cantwell. You can hear the story through the link in our show notes.
It's good to get the word out there so, you know, more people look into the whole phenomena. And do you happen to know, are these separate people that have told the same story about going into the Blue Mountains?
Evidently, there are a few people making this claim. I have to admit, this is a fairly recent, I mean, in the last, I think, 5 or 10 years, story coming out of Australia, but it was something that I really wasn't familiar with. And if there is some good information on it, maybe some of our Australian listeners could give us a heads up on it.
That's right. We have a ton of listeners in Australia, and so a little shout out. Thanks for listening, Australia. Was that corny? That was kind of corny.
No. No cornier than usual.
Okay. Right, thank you.
No problem. Finally, we have two new items from NASA that may be of interest to listeners. First, the newest class of astronaut candidates has been announced. For the first time, the class is evenly divided between men and women. Currently, about one quarter of the active NASA astronauts are women. Check the link in our show notes to NASA coverage to learn more about this group of 8 space pioneers. NASA has also announced an initiative to detect near-Earth objects, the asteroids that have a potential to actually hit our planet. And they are asking for the assistance of citizen scientists and the private industry. Calling it the Grand Challenge, the program seems to still be in the organizational stages in many ways, but aims to detect all near-Earth objects larger than 100 feet across. We have linked to NASA's Grand Challenge page in our show notes, and there you can learn more about it and watch the entire 2-hour NASA presentation on the initiative. Now, Martin, I was kind of wondering what you think about this effort by NASA to detect near-Earth objects. And also, do you think there's a potential for some kind of crowdsourced citizen science effort to further the cause of the UFO field?
Well, first of all, I think it's great that they're doing that. You know, we need a collaborative, especially it would be good to know if we have any near-Earth objects, you know, heading toward us. But it reminds me of something that Jose Lai said a few weeks ago in the podcast from the Chilean government's perspective, that they're actually looking to connect with people worldwide. NASA is a government entity, and we don't have that power ourselves. We don't have anything organized by our government. So we really don't have an organization that has power enough to get a collaborative worldwide effort.
Well, not yet. But, I mean, SETI is not a government agency, and they have their SETI at Home program that allows them to sort through a lot more data, borrowing computer time on volunteers all over the world. And I know National Geographic uses some crowdsourcing efforts to examine pictures of Mongolia, for example, for potential archaeological sites. So,
I see where you're going.
Yeah, I mean, we just need a good idea,
yeah,
and you know, something that needs time put into it, and I think it could be organized a lot more easily now than it was just 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. So we may be heading in that direction. So is that it for the news today, Michael?
That is it for the news this week.
Are you going to be building your little radio telescope out in the backyard?
Hey, I have looked into building a radio telescope. It is a lot easier than you'd think. And thanks to all the thrown away DirecTV and Dish Network satellites, a lot cheaper than you might think. I just have a lot of trees around.
Yeah. Well, get to work with a chainsaw, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right. I'll talk to you next week.
How are you doing, Thomas?
I'm great, Martin. How about you?
Very well, thank you. And I wanted to say that a number of my listeners have contacted me over the last several months and wanted you on the show. They said you're a fascinating guest. They've listened to you on a few different shows. And here you are. You're finally here.
I'm honored. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you bet. And your book, Out Behind the Cosmic Veil, is very intriguing. Why don't you go ahead and just jump right in and let us know what that's about?
Yeah, I should talk a little bit about how the book came about. During my younger years, my teens and 20s, I had a number of profound personal experiences. I guess you could call them parapsychological. I don't really discuss them on the air. I touch upon them in my book a little bit. But anyway, these experiences caused me to call into question the model of reality that I was taught in physics, because that particular model didn't accommodate supernatural or paranormal or parapsychological phenomena. And so the compelling question for me became, how could the universe be really put together that would allow these things to occur? Because regardless to what is unknown, what we do know is that anything that is measurable and observable is physical. And anything that's physical is going to have to conform to the laws and principles that govern the physical universe, even though we're still in the process of discovering those. So what I set about doing was to come up with a conceptual model of how reality might be put together that not only accommodates the normal, but also the paranormal, and also sheds light on a number of, frustrating mysteries and anomalies that still confront mainstream physics. Searching for this model, when I finally came upon one that worked quite well and answered all the pertinent questions that were presented to it, it was time to put it in writing and publish it, and that's where Behind the Cosmic Veil came from.
Okay. Now, can you give some examples of some... now, what did you call that again? It was...
Supergeometric theory. There's a couple of fundamental principles that it incorporates. One of them is something that's been knocked around for a very long time, and that's the idea that reality is more than the physical universe. Mainstream physics has a predominant perspective or paradigm that what is physical is reality, and what is reality is physical, and that's synonymous. In other words, reality is the physical universe and vice versa. They're equivalent. However, there have always been concepts that incorporated parts of reality that aren't necessarily physical. And so when we're talking about supergeometry, we're talking about an order or a structure or a matrix, if you will, a body of information, a body of data that exists beyond and above space-time, but is actually connected to space-time. And moreover, that the order and structure of physical reality actually arises and emerges from this superphysical superset of the universe, which is above the dimensions of space and time, height, width, depth, and time, the four dimensions. This has been talked about, Martin, for centuries. We can go all the way back to Plato. And he called this concept forms. If we look at the Bible, Judeo-Christian tradition, in the Old Testament, it speaks of the wisdom of God, which is this same kind of concept, this intelligent order that existed prior to and independently of and outside of what ultimately became the physical creation. In the New Testament, in the first chapter or the first paragraph of the Gospel of John, the original Greek uses the word logos, L-O-G-O-S, which is a philosophical Greek term about 500 years older than the actual manuscript itself, that describes the same kind of idea. If we go into the 20th century, we have several very prominent mainstream physicists, not fringe or quacky or anything like that, but highly respected, who have proposed the same kind of idea. David Bohm, one of the most profound or pronounced physicists of the 20th century, he called his concept of it implicate order. And he said this was an order and structure that existed outside of space-time, but gave rise to the physical order and structure that is within space-time, and which what he called explicate order, which was the physical universe resulting from this implicate order. John Wheeler, another well-known physicist, called it pre-geometry. David Finkelstein called it coherent superpositions. And if we go into parapsychology, some people are familiar with the stories about Edgar Cayce. He called it the Akasha. So this is a very old idea. Supergeometry is my particular term because I felt geometry was a word that people could wrap their heads around and kind of get a gist of what this meant. And then the word super being a standard prefix in science and physics to talk about a superset of some other kind of set or subsystem. And so that's where the term comes from.
When you say that these ideas were around for a very long time, what is the light you have shed on this idea? What is your particular take?
Well, that's a good question. What I have added to this, the element that was always missing, was how this information could actually materialize in the physical reality. What was the mechanism behind this? This is something that had never been explained before. Because even if we talk about something arising from a quantum level, mainstream physics still does not have an answer for how this uncertainty arising from the quantum underpinnings of macro reality that we normally perceive, how this boils up into structures and orders that follow very confined restraints, that the universe is a very orderly place. And, unlike some of the philosophies that say, well, given enough time, anything can happen, that's not really true. In other words, you're not going to put your Thanksgiving turkey in the oven, and I don't care how long you wait, even zillions of years, you're not going to open it up and find a Wankel rotary engine. You know, that's simply not going to happen.
Yeah.
A human mother is not going to, under natural conditions, not going to give birth to a giraffe.
Mm-hmm.
No. So there are certain constraints in which it operates. So there has to be a way in which this order, this non-physical order, came about into physical reality. And so the aspect of my work is to have taken a very close look at gravity. Now, this may be an odd thing for some people to think. I said, well, gee, what's he talking about gravity about for? Well, gravity is very fundamental to the way that the universe is put together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in school, we were allegedly taught about gravity. That's what they told us they were teaching us about. But in fact, what they were teaching us about is gravitational effect.
Mm.
Because the actual physical constituent of gravity is completely unknown.
Mm-hmm.
We really have no established fact as to what the substance of gravity actually is. Classical physics has told us, anchored on the incredible work in the 19th century of Michael Faraday and James Clerk Maxwell, that gravity must be a force operating like electromagnetism. And we were taught it's a fundamental force of nature. But when we get down to the brass tacks of it, a force, to fit that definition, has to be a wave mm-hmm. that also articulates as a particle. And what I mean is this. Let's say if we take a look at electromagnetism, we have an electron that can propagate as an electromagnetic field. So we have a wave component and we have a particle component. And this we have established for three of the four forces, electromagnetism, strong and weak nuclear force. What we have not established is the hypothesis that there's such a thing as a gravitational boson, more commonly called a graviton mm-hmm. or a gravity wave. We have never found these components, and we have no evidence that they actually exist. It's just from a strictly material or physical paradigm that they must exist. If the universe is all of reality, if all of reality is nothing but physical, then there must be a graviton or a gravity wave. My argument is the fact that we can't find one is the evidence that all of reality is not just physical alone. There's something else going on. We have another aspect of this. You've probably heard of the Standard Model, which is what physics uses. It's a model that describes the particles of the universe, the fundamental particles, and their interactions. And one of the big, excitements of last year was the discovery of a Higgs boson, which filled one of the final gap in this Standard Model. There is no expression or place in the Standard Model for gravity.
Wow.
And this is what most lay people don't understand. Moreover, the Standard Model operates substantially quite well without even considering gravity. It's not an element in that model. So when you look at all these things and you understand that every material object in the universe has a gravitational field and a curvature of space that surrounds it, there must be something about gravity that, A, is fundamental to the way that the universe is put together, and B, is an anomaly that indicates that our current way of looking at reality, at the way the universe is put together, is somehow incorrect. There's something fundamentally wrong with the way that we're looking at it. What I'm leading up to is that in my model, gravity itself is a phenomenon that is caused superphysically, or what we would call non-locally. Now, this is very bizarre when you first think about it, because it's so opposite not only to anything that everybody's been taught, but it's even counterintuitive. So what I argue is this. This is my model of reality, is that here we have this information that lies above and outside of space-time. And then we also have some other influences. I don't call them forces because that's physical. Influences at work in this higher realm that give rise to space-time itself. And because of the variations within that, in those influences, space-time comes out in kind of a pimpled surface. It's not like a flat fabric, not in all places. We have variations where we have this flat surface of space-time that is a constant at the speed of light, and then we have pimples in it. We have these depressions that are subluminal, so that time and space become a variation, a variable, independent variables within those pockets of space-time. And what happens is that these pockets, which are the curvatures of space that Einstein demonstrated
right.
to us, that information drops down into these pockets. And as soon as that information becomes subliminal, by the very way that the universe is put together, that information begins to materialize into physical reality. So what we have then, rather than a mass bending the space around it and causing the effect known as gravity, it is within the bends of space that matter materializes. And gravity is part of the effect of an inward focus that causes this information to condense into physical reality.
As far as planets forming, how does that play into effect?
Well, I mean, what you're talking about is a very complex process where you have an accumulation of all these small pockets of space-time, what I call differential field bubbles, containing materializing information. And they would work together to collectively form larger objects, like planets, or even if we get into atomic structures like molecules, that type of thing. This is kind of difficult to wrap your head around. I've come up with kind of a model that would help a little bit. I say, imagine a picture making a meatball. And just, and it's not a perfect metaphor, Martin, but it conveys the right gist. You know, like Einstein's thought experiments, none of them were perfect metaphors and models of reality. They were only used so that he could convey the proper concept. Mm-hmm. And so if you're making a meatball, imagine that the meat itself is the raw material from which the objects of physical reality are made. And imagine your fingers being the curvatures of space that surround the meatball, and the force of your hands being applied to that meat and compressing it is what we call gravity.
Interesting.
Now, what this does for us is a number of things. One of the things it does for us is that it eliminates the need for a graviton. It leads us to the ability to say that the reason why we cannot detect a graviton is simply that it is what it appears to be. There are none. That's why we can't find them. If space is bent from what we call non-local, from a cause which is not physical or local to the effect, if we have curvatures of space that are actually being formed from above space-time, this would explain why we see 90% more gravitational effect in the universe than we see physical matter to account for it in the material paradigm. That means that the reason why we can't find this thing called dark matter is because it doesn't exist.
Hmm.
It's not necessary to exist. The reason why we come up with these odd ideas like dark matter and string theory is because of this paradigm in physics that everything must be physical. Therefore, every physical effect and observation must have a physical cause that's contained within the same universe. And so when we can't find these causes, because we've quite honestly reached a point in physics over the last decade or two where we have literally run out of material causes for all the material effects that we've seen. We've just literally run out of material. In order to keep with that material paradigm, we have to make material up. We have to fantasize it. We have to imagine it. And this is some of the things that we're dealing with. Even string theory, as contorted as that is, trying to shoehorn all observable effects into a physical paradigm, most people don't realize that all string theory is dependent upon the existence of a graviton. Wow. Remove the graviton and all string theory vaporizes.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
A question that comes to mind, how would you explain the expansion and the more rapid expansion of the universe?
Well, now, this is interesting, and that's an excellent question. I'm glad you asked that, and I very rarely get that question asked. One of the mysteries that astrophysicists deal with, that when they observe the expanding universe and kind of run the model in reverse, they find that at the early part of the universe, there must have been a period of time where there was an acceleration of expansion, where the rate of expansion of the Big Bang was much faster than anything that immediately followed it up until our time. And they can't understand what this huge expansion is. And so, of course, forcing everything into a material paradigm, one of their explanations for it is to make up a hypothetical energy called dark energy. Again, something which we have no evidence for, can't measure, et cetera, et cetera. According to my model, Martin, the very earliest parts of the Big Bang were superluminal. They were faster than the speed of light. And they eventually decelerated to the speed of light, so that when the universe actually became physical, luminal and subluminal, and that the dimensions of space-time actually unfolded fully from that original Big Bang, the universe was in a state of like a giant halo or a balloon. So the first microseconds, so to speak, of the Big Bang were not physical. They were super physical. And so we have this super light expansion. So by the time it is measurable and observable physically, it appears that it has expanded in the first seconds at a much greater rate than it did once it materialized. And so when I picture this giant smoke ring of cosmic particles of primordial soup, I have a little pet name. Instead of calling it the Big Bang, I call it the Big Puff.
Of course, the show is called Podcast UFO. We talk a lot about science and other things as well, but is there a place for, say, space travel, for a possibility of UFOs visiting us being extraterrestrial?
Well, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I consider paranormal and supernatural phenomena to be a legitimate body of data that must be included in and explained by any true theory of everything. Physics will never come up with a theory of everything without incorporating all observable phenomena. And things like that we have from paranormal and ufology are certainly part of those observations. Now, what I like to do to talk about this is that I want people to kind of put out of their mind what most people normally think of with these phenomena. And what I mean by that is that they focus their thinking more on the perpetrators. And so, for example, in paranormal phenomena, hauntings, that type of thing, people normally focus on spirits or disembodied intelligences or entities, that kind of thing. In UFOs, we have a tendency to think of the cause in terms of aliens or maybe some kind of a black ops program or something along those lines. We always focus on the perpetrator, on the criminology. If we put that aside for a minute, let's put the all thoughts of those kinds of things aside and just think like a forensist. Take a look at the actual phenomena themselves, what it appears to be, what the physical observations are, without any thought about who might be behind it. You know, in other words, don't think about the murderer. We want to concentrate on the physical gun itself. Forget about who's holding it or pulling the trigger. When we look at that, we find that paranormal phenomena and UFO phenomena share a lot of common traits. We see the exact same kinds of things going on, you know, materializations, dematerializations, malfunctioning of electronic equipment in the vicinity of these close proximity of these events. We see orb-like structures in both areas of observation. We see things that are easily understood as anti-gravity. In other words, objects that are moving, apparently of their own selves, with no visible means of propulsion, nor measurable energy fields that would be able to cause such a physical object to move.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that, in my mind, that the physics behind both of these things are the same. And, in fact, if UFOs are intelligently designed spacecraft, if that's what they are, my contention is that the intelligence behind them has cracked the code to paranormal phenomena, which is a natural phenomena. It occurs by itself. They have discovered the physics behind it and have built technology based on those principles, because they can make UFOs do the exact same things that what we observe at the sites of hauntings.
Wow.
And we can conclude that by just looking at the observation themselves and not jumping any conclusions beyond that as to who done it.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we have here? What we have is a couple of different conclusions that we can make from all these observations. And we have to come up with some very fundamental conclusions. Because, as Einstein said, the final theory would be simple and it would be beautiful, like a schoolchild could understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So what this leads to me is this. When we look at paranormal phenomena, and we look at some aspects of ufology, we even look at quantum physics, and we come up with this idea that what I call my definition of the universe is that the universe is an expression of materialized and materializing information. That everything that occurs in the universe fits that definition. Everything is a result of materializing and materialized information. Now, here's where it gets really interesting, Martin. In most of the objects that we observe in the physical universe, we see them in a state of full materialization. We don't get a chance to see the process as it begins and starts. I liken it to standing on the side of a highway, a superhighway, and watching cars whiz by at 75 miles an hour. That is a fully realized state of that system of transportation. What we don't see and cannot see is the whole process from, you know, blueprints to the mines that mine the steel, to the chemical factories that make the synthetics, to the assembly plants that put the car together, to the machinery that lays the asphalt down to make the highway, to the car that sits in your driveway that the driver gets in, starts it up, drives out to the access road, goes onto the on-ramp, and accelerates. We don't get to see any of that. We just see the final realized state of reality. But there's a couple areas that we do get to see the process of information materializing into physical reality in real time. One of those areas is quantum physics, but one of those areas is paranormal phenomena.
Hmm.
When we hear an apparition or see an apparition come out of midair, we are watching the materialization of a coherent collection of information in real time. And if we see an apparition, as some people do in residences where the form is recognizable, and somebody goes, investigates, and digs up the old 80-year-old, 100-year-old photograph of a person, which is also a collection of information transmitted through a beam of light and recorded on a film.
Mm-hmm.
And they show it to the witnesses, and they say, oh, my gosh, that's the one we've been seeing. Well, that's the exact collection of information that has been materialized 100 years ago, was recorded on this plate, and can be compared to the collection of information that's materializing today and seen that it's identical. And that's the proof that there is a body of information that exists outside of space-time that can materialize in a physical reality, because we have no physical structures local to the apparition that is capable of not only recording that kind of information, but actually projecting it back into a location that we could witness.
This is really fascinating. I'm really, really enjoying this. There are so many unexplained phenomena out there. Basically, what I'm hearing or thinking I'm understanding is that these total unexplained things that happen actually have a reason for happening in your mind.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If we're talking about reason in terms of intelligence, yes. If there's reason in terms of there's an actual physical principle and mechanism occurring, that's also a yes. Let me take what I was talking about a step further. Because clearly, if this was something that could be said in 25 words or less, it would have been said centuries ago. I mentioned earlier about gravity. Now, the curvature of space is actually occurring superphysically. And that once those curves are made, we see an effect that we call gravity, and information materializes within the center of those curves. If that's the case, then if this theory is correct, if we view a paranormal event, we should be able to witness effects that would be predictable based on the idea that space is actually expanding and bending in the presence of physical content, what Einstein called physical content. If it happens in a haunted house, for example, in the middle of a room, physical content would be the air. So the bending of space and the crushing of that space on the outside of that bend being occupied by physical content would have specific effects. And I know we may be running out of time. Without getting into too much detail, the effects would be a stock shopping list of paranormal phenomena. We would see electromagnetic fields emerge out of thin air. We would see cold spots. We would see drops in barometric pressure. We would have people reporting a feeling of heaviness because of the increased gravitational field that's being created by the twisting of space. Another thing that we would see is that the excitement of the electrons in the air molecules that are on the outer edge of this bubble would cause them to jump in their higher orbits around the nucleus of the atoms. This is where the measurement of an electromagnetic field out of thin air would occur. However, what goes up must come down. And when the electrons expend this excitement, they drop back down in their lower orbits. And when they do that, there's a couple things that they can emit. One thing is heat energy, which mm-hmm. would explain the thermal signatures that people record on thermal cameras. There's definitely characteristics of it to show that it's actually happening at the surface of whatever they're photographing, rather than the heat generating from a core of a physical body like we see when we measure film a living being. But the other thing that they emit is photons, particles of light. And so here we have a sphere of space-time jacketed in electromagnetic field and emitting photons. And I'm fond of saying I've given the world its first scientific physical definition of the structure of what investigators call a luminous orb.
Thomas, I'm going to have you on again because I feel like we just barely scratched the surface of what you have going on there.
Oh, yeah, I'd be honored, Martin. It'd be my pleasure. We can get a little bit further on to what I'm talking about with primary paranormal effects and all that kind of good stuff. Well, thank you very much for having me. I look forward to continuing our conversation sometime down the road.
Absolutely. That's it for our show today. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to visit our website. We always have informational blogs and articles on there. Plus, you can visit our forum and check that out, or our very active Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. All the icons and everything's right there on podcastufo.com. Thanks for listening. Keep your eyes to the sky. We'll be right back.
Amen.